Today on Movie Wildlife, we talk about Frankenstein, we talk about Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere, and also the movie Blue Moon. It's time for Movie Wallace. Hi, this is Joe.
Hi, it's Ashley.
Yes, as well.
Movie Wallace is your weekly dose of film reviews, movie news, and general banter in theatres, on DVD, online streaming, or in the back of an airplane. If you love the movies, this show is for you. I uncharacteristically goofed, so the Hyatt's Yasti and Hyatt's Rashmi may not have made it into the episode.
Oh.
Apologies for that.
It's okay.
I can't edit it.
Hi, hello everyone.
Everyone knows you're here anyway.
Yes.
And if you're watching on YouTube, they could see you. So check us out on...
You're not just here by yourself.
On YouTube. All right. So today we're going to do another triple bill. We have Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein, Springsteen, Deliver Me From Evil. No, Deliver Me From Nowhere. Goodness me. And Blue Moon. You can tell I'm getting hungry. I'm going to grab a piece of that wonderfulness.
Mooncake.
This was made by a friend of yours.
Yes.
This is made by Ying Chen.
Ah.
Ying is lovely.
And Ying is lovely. And
well, thank you, Ying.
She's a co-worker. And she made this. She was a co-worker. She made
it's
this.
Delicious.
Like, yeah, I was going to meet her for lunch. And the night before, she made these.
And what did
walnut,
you make her?
Walnut. And I gave her... my good wishes.
Well, these are legit pretty.
Because Yasti's a pretty good baker himself.
I wish I had. Yeah.
All right. Well, in I go. While I crunch through this,
I will do the introduction.
Rashmi, can you tell us all about Guillermo del Toro's Frankenstein?
Yes. So, as Joe said, Guillermo del Toro brings us another version of the Frankenstein movie. This was originally written by Mary Shelley. And I actually had ChatGPT run a query because I was like, how many Frankenstein movies have there been? And ChatGPT told me that as of October 2025, there are 423 known feature films that include some version of Dr. Frankenstein or Frankenstein's monster or direct adaptations of Mary Shelley's novels. So I wonder if she knew at the time when she wrote this story, it would be so...
I'm sure. So
made and remade and
so
lauded.
Iconic,
yeah.
Like
and
decades.
Exactly.
Later. Yeah.
But here we have another version. This one stars Oscar Isaac, Jacob Elordi. We have Christoph Waltz and we have Mia Goth who play the main characters and then a few others thrown in. So the description of this one is a brilliant but egotistical scientist brings a creature to life in a monstrous experiment that ultimately leads to the undoing of both the creator and his tragic creation. This running time is 2 hours and 29 minutes. Yazdi, why don't you tell us, is that worth your time?
Okay. So, sorry, I have to put the dog down.
No, set her down on the ground, not put her down.
I'm setting my dog down on the floor because she was in my lap. Okay, listen, I'm a big fan of Guillermo del Toro.
I think you are the biggest fan
probably
out of the three of
us. Probably amongst the three of you. I think he has an amazing imagination. I think he's incapable of making a movie that is not visually stunning. I think he has been on a trip lately of making movies which were dear to him when he was growing up, and he's kind of doing his reimagination. He did Pinocchio recently, and now he's doing Frankenstein. I think his scope for the Frankenstein film is very wide, and he's kind of trying to go for an epic story starting with, you know, Frankenstein's maker and the maker's parents, and it's very epic in its scope. And like we've said this many times, with the long running time of the movie, I almost wondered if this would be so much better consumed if it was like 20-minute episodes which run back to back. I think I would love that particular series. But it's been dropped as a 3-hour movie on Netflix. I found certain parts of the story kind of wobbly or not fully explained. But I think visually the movie is so masterful. The production design is so exquisite that all the kind of wobbliness, I think, of the plot at different points kind of is forgiven. I think it reads like a fable. At the end of the day, I'm just going to end with this. I like the fact that all of these monster movies that Del Toro makes, he wants to show that the monster is the misunderstood one. He always has sympathy for the monster, and this is no different. And I think that's why this might be a different adaptation from previous ones. This is very, very... I think there have been others which are also very sympathetic to Frankenstein.
I think that's at the core of the Frankenstein myth is that the monster is, you know, that we are the monsters.
Right. So I enjoyed it. It's not his best film by a wide margin. But even mid... Guillermo del Toro is very welcome, Guillermo del Toro, for me.
Joe?
Yeah, I struggle with this director. He blows hot and cold for me in terms of what works. When it works well, it works brilliantly. But most of the time, I kind of struggle. And this one is another one where it kind of feels bloated and indulgent. He's been given $1 million gazillion to make this movie what it is. I think it takes a lot of liberties with the Frankenstein legend. I mean, this is a version of the story that I don't recognize at all. You know, just from, you know, the characters that are introduced, the plots and the subplots, you know, how the monster is created and animated, and then how, you know, the monster is received. You know, there are no pitchforks in this one, right? Like, you know, when I think of Frankenstein, you know, I always think of pitchforks and villagers. So, I mean, he's done a very original take on the material, but it's bloated and it's indulgent and it feels self-important and he's gotten carried away. All of that makes it sound like I hated the movie, which I did not. It was very engaging, but it was too long.
I really like this movie. I think it feels very much of an origin story, Yazdi, like you said, but the origin of the maker and the reasoning of why he makes the monster. Like, we finally understand, like, what drove him to do this. Mm-hmm. And that motivation is really evident in this movie. And I really like that. And then there's this kind of like a quiet love story and unrequited love, which I really liked. And then it's got great production, amazing costume, beautiful design, sound design, music.
Yeah.
It's craft, really handsome.
The craft
it's a really
is off the
handsome
charts.
Movie, yeah. And it feels really epic, and it feels very award worthy. And I think it had enough to keep me engaged that I didn't even look at my watch for over an hour and a half. Like, it was very engaging for me. Yeah, there are some nitpicks, but I think you know, I think that. Oscar Isaac, fantastic performance. And then Jacob Elordi blew me away as the monster.
Really?
Yeah, his physicality and the fact that it's a very vanity-free performance. You know, Jacob Elordi's kind of come from nowhere very, very quickly. You know, he came from that show with Zendaya.
Euphoria.
And then he's kind of had this... explosion. We've seen him everywhere.
He's like a different flavor Adam Driver for me.
Well, he's a different flavor Austin Butler for me. Like,
sure.
Austin Butler and Jacob Elordi kind of play, I think, would compete for the same type of roles. But in this one, I love that it's such a vanity-free performance. And again, that physicality. He's not playing a handsome fellow, which he normally plays. So I was quite impressed with that. And Mia Goth, I thought, was very good. So I think in terms of the performances, they're all really, really good performances. But it feels very well-paced. I didn't feel like it's rushed. I agree it's a long running time. But I was entertained the entire way through. And I was really engaged with the story. And it didn't necessarily feel more about the monster than the maker, I think.
Sure.
And that, it was more about, I think it's more Oscar Isaac's story than it was Frankenstein's story for me.
My one question about the movie was, who is this for? Like, is this for an adult audience? Is it for kids? Because it's...
Hell no.
Oh, I wouldn't take a child to see this.
Well, I mean, it's going to be streaming on Netflix, right?
Sure.
So, yeah, I mean, so right if it is for, and if it is for adults, I'm sure.
It's an R.
It's an R. If it is for adults, then it's a missed opportunity, I think, because it's so chaste. Like, he's almost unwilling to get into anything remotely physical about Frankenstein. Even his relationship with Elizabeth's character is kept relatively chaste. I mean, it's very obvious that she has a lot of feelings for him. But I think it's a missed opportunity because when last year when we saw Nosferatu, that took the Dracula story and filled it in with a lot of lust and, you know, burning up, and the horror is kind of mixed in with being burn, you know, being caught up with desire. And I think there is similar elements here, but by kind of pushing back on that and keeping it relatively clean, it seemed like a missed opportunity for me.
I just
want to comment because, I mean, Poor Things has that similar Frankenstein's type thing. Right. And I think with Poor Things going all,
it went the other direction,
dialing up to 11 on the sexuality, right? You know, with the assembled creature true. Animated. I think he's like, right, someone's done that already.
Yeah.
You know, let's not go psychosexual with Frankenstein.
See, but I actually like the chasteness of it, Yazdi, because to me, then it really explores this idea of love. Like, what is love? And love can be very pure. And so it really kind of celebrates that pure love that Elizabeth feels for the monster, right? You can't help yourself, but something is drawing you to this thing. And so, like, in The Shape of Water as well,
I know,
he kind of did
Water
it.
Is pretty sexual.
Sure, it was.
But I felt Elizabeth was pretty horny for
him. She was horny for him, but we never see it.
We never see
it. And I'm okay with that, because remember, I'm the Puritan in the group.
Yeah.
But no edging in this one.
No edging in this movie. Yeah.
So I kind of like that angle of she just can't help falling in love with this as opposed to falling in lust with this.
Sure.
And definitely Poor Things was way too lusty for my liking.
Yeah. The other thing which, if you're going to do this sweeping kind of deep dive, and it's very unhurried. I mean, I like the pace, but it's very unhurried.
Yeah.
Like, there is a whole piece with Christoph Waltz at the beginning, which is so good. And if it was just one episode I was watching on TV, I'd be so content. Like, yeah. And then there's a whole part towards the end about this older gentleman who lives in a hut and his family goes away. And he builds this very father and son-like relationship with this older man. Do you remember?
Yes.
I think that itself could be a great episode. So I think when you're piling on all these, you know, sub-stories, one on top of each other, it feels very bulky. Whereas, anyway, I've made my point that I think as a serialized version, it would be a lot more palatable.
Yeah, there are definite chapters in this story.
Yeah.
And there's two parts, right? But the parts didn't make sense. That was a weird concession, but anyway.
And I think if you're going to do such a deep dive, then I would have liked for them to provide an explanation for why this Frankenstein that has been put together from other human parts, why does he heal by himself? Why is he immortal? It never kind of made sense to me. You're just supposed to believe that he's somehow become this kind of undefeatable, you know, figure. So, I mean, some explanation for that would have been good. I also thought that Jacob Elordi is so covered up with, you know,
bandages
and prosthetics. I couldn't really see. I didn't even realize it was him playing it in the movie. But I agree that there's a lot of physicality to that performance.
Yeah.
And he's constantly playing with scale as well. Because sometimes Frankenstein looks substantially bigger than Oscar Isaac, other times not. But so when you're doing that kind of stuff, I think it's very difficult to film it. So I think, again, the craft of this is off the charts.
Score. That sounds like a summing up.
It's an 8 out of, well, maybe a 7.5 out of 10 for me.
Which?
But sure, I'll bump up to 8, I think.
You've been very generous.
I've been very generous, yeah. But I mean, I think there is no other Del Toro, right? There's only a handful of people like Guillermo Del Toro, like, what's his name, who made The Witch Nosferatu last year.
Oh.
You know, so there's only a handful of filmmakers who are making a deep dive into the dark fables and kind of reinterpreting them. You know, the production design is exquisite. I mean, I wanted to spend time. I mean, a lot of it is probably CGI, but I wanted to spend time in that lab. I wanted to spend time in that big, tall, you know, clock building where he's putting things together. I mean, it's just visually a feast for the eyes.
Robert Eggers was the director.
So there's only a handful of people who are doing this. And so I want to encourage them. I want to have Del Toro keep making films. So for me, again, this is not the best Guillermo del Toro. That would be Pan's Labyrinth, but for what it is, 8 out of 10, well done. And I'm shocked the movie's actually doing very well on Rotten Tomatoes. It has 94% audience score and 86% from critics, so it's not doing bad.
Joe?
Yeah, 7.5 for me, but I will round it down. to use Yazdi's technique here, but I mean, it really is. To me, it was just kind of bloated and indulgent. I couldn't escape the fact that you've given this guy it almost feels in some ways that he's gone like Wes Anderson and you know, slipped into kind of a cliche of what his movies are. This is Del Toro being, I mean, you know, just pause this movie at any moment in time and then let's, you know, play the game, guess the director. It's absolutely 150% Guillermo del Toro in every frame. And so, again, I feel like he could have dialed it back a notch or two. But, I mean, story-wise, it worked. I was always intrigued. I think it slowed down a little bit in Act 3 to the point where I was struggling to keep my attention. So, again, all a long way of saying, you know, on Netflix, it's a no-brainer. Go switch it on. You'll watch it if you don't like it.
You might want to watch it over 2 nights.
And yeah, give it a break. Yeah.
Or maybe 3 nights.
Maybe it'll work a little better there. But it's, you know.
So 7, 8. You know, I'm also a 7.5, but I'm not sure.
So why don't we just say it's a 7.5 for all three of us? But yeah.
I think Yazdi's patented the half.
He has to pay a royalty now. And I think I enjoyed it probably the most out of the three of us. I think I'm going to still give it a 7 out of 10.
Ooh, okay.
Yeah, but I really did enjoy it. I mean, that's not, you know, again, I think it's such a handsome, epic movie. And I think Oscar Isaac, I'm going to give him some award love.
I mean, I think
Elodie's going to get the Oscar for me. Yeah. Elodie was superb.
He was very good. Against type.
Yeah, I mean, I think maybe Del Toro wasn't very successful at it, but I think he was really trying to play the notes of the perils of creation, like the perils of the creator, like, you know, and it could be about a piece of art. It could be about anything you make, you know, where it comes from, what, you know, how the world treats that kind of changes your relationship with what you've created. So I think he's trying to get to some of that, you know, that relationship between the creator and the created, which I know is at the basis of the Frankenstein story, but I think he's trying a little bit deeper. He's not always successful. Christoph Waltz was great, I thought.
There's also this element of the bullied become the bully, the bullied become the bully.
Yeah.
And there is that kind of, I think that's why it's important that he showed the relationship with his father to start with. That's why that story of the creator's relationship with his father was so important, because we see elements of that play out when he's created his own son in a way. Yeah. So I think there's a lot in here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
A lot to chew on. Yes.
Next one.
Next movie is Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere.
Okay, so I'll be introducing that one. If you have watched or heard of the movie Crazy Heart or Out of the Furnace or Pale Blue Eyes, you will know that Scott Cooper is a damn good filmmaker. And his latest movie is this biopic of Bruce Springsteen called Springsteen, Deliver Me From Nowhere. It's an unlikely choice. I would not have thought that Scott Cooper would take on this movie. It's based on a book written by Warren Zanes, which specifically delves into what led to Steven Spielberg making his Nebraska album, which was almost entirely...
Bruce Springsteen, I think you said Steven Spielberg.
Did I say Steven Spielberg?
Yeah, I think so. Okay. I don't know.
If I did, then I meant Bruce Springsteen. So it's based on this book by Warren Zanes, which talks about Bruce Springsteen's time while he was making the Nebraska album. And the movie is written and directed by Scott Cooper and Warren Zanes, who is given co-writing credits. And the one-liner is that Bruce Springsteen's journey crafting his 1982 album Nebraska, which emerged as he recorded Born in the USA with the E Street Band, is the basis for this story. Jeremy Allen White, red hot right now, fresh off of all of the success from The Bear, plays Bruce Springsteen. And I was surprised to find out he also has done all the singing in the movie. It's not Bruce Springsteen. It's him who has done the singing.
Wow.
Jeremy Strong, fresh off the success of Succession, plays his manager, John Landau. Paul Walter Hauser has been in so many movies this year as well. As is Stephen Graham. Stephen Graham, he's most recently, we saw him on Adolescence.
Yeah.
He's this British actor.
Yes.
Odessa Young plays...
There's an irony to the character he plays here.
Yeah. For sure. For sure. Odessa Young plays Springsteen's love interest at that part of his... of his life, which was Faye Romano, and then David Krumholtz and Gabby Hoffman and Mark Maron, as well as Grace Gummer, Meryl Streep's daughter, round off the cast. So there's a lot of expectation on this. Bruce Springsteen is very much alive. It's difficult to do biopics. I was scared about this movie. I almost didn't want to watch it because I thought it would be embarrassing. What did you think about this? Does the movie clear the hurdle?
Sure. So I'm a big fan of Scott Cooper as a director. I think he's made some Out of the Furnace really worked for me. Gosh, mm-hmm. That movie has resonated. But look, the only thing that I really can say that I liked about this movie was Jeremy Allen White's performance. Overall, I struggled to stay interested. Right. So ostensibly, there's a mental health theme that is... through the movie from start to finish. And I don't think I really understood that until the title cards at the end of the movie, because we weren't given much. You know, we had these long kind of shots of Springsteen sitting there kind of staring into space and struggling with things. And, you know, he's clearly a very reserved, he internalizes a lot of things, and that came across too. But, you know, the mental health aspects that the movie was trying to portray it's almost like they didn't want to hit us over the head with it, so they dialed it back, and they dialed it back to the point where I don't think it made its point. So I just found the movie interesting, but ultimately a very dull experience. I struggled to kind of keep my interest in it. And, you know, for most of its running part. And there's a huge opportunity missed from my perspective to celebrate the music of Springsteen, which I'm sure you can go on YouTube and watch it. But there's not enough of the musical journey, which I was really keen to see in, you know, in movies that we just watched, like, you know, Amy Winehouse and Bohemian Rhapsody. And what was the other one that we watched in that? Elton John movie. I wanted more of that, because I always liked Bruce Springsteen, never loved Bruce Springsteen. So I was ultimately disappointed by this. It was dull.
Exactly what Joe said. Joe stole my notes this week. I was going to start by saying yawn. I looked at my watch so many times towards the end. I just wanted it to be over. Again, I think it's a good acting vehicle for both Jeremy Strong and Jeremy Allen White. But it's such a dull movie. And it's strange to me that they do play... Born in the USA, and I'm on Fire, which I love. That's mm-hmm. one of my favorite Bruce Springsteen songs. I'm not a huge fan. And again, I think it's too subtle. Like, if this was about mental illness, then let's be about mental illness, because that's what he overcame, and we should celebrate that. But the fact that we just have Jeremy Allen White, there's not much dialogue, it feels even. It's just him looking into corners of walls and looking out into the distance. And then I didn't even understand the role of Jeremy Strong, even though I thought he was a good actor. He's just convincing him to write the music. And yet it's a movie about the album Nebraska, but then why have we got the soundtrack of Born in the USA? I don't know. It just seems, it's a very mixed up, strange, dull movie. I did not enjoy this one at all.
So yes, I'm going to be the contrarian.
Okay.
That's not like you at all.
That's so not like me at all.
Yeah. What have you done with Yazdi?
I'm not the world's biggest Bruce Springsteen fan, right? I mean, I admire him. I actually admire him more for his positions on things, especially of late politically. Yes. And I did not grow up, right? I didn't grow up at that time in the US when, you know, he was speaking and so forth. But I mean, of course, everybody knows his iconic songs. So I came into this like, I don't even want to watch this movie. It's probably going to be cringy. But, and I think it's, you know, it's kind of difficult to do a good musical biopic. I mean, I loathed that.
Rocketman?
Rocketman, I was a little bit okay with
Bohemian Rhapsody.
So I think all of them, I think the problem is if you try to do like a full life story, then it becomes like a Wikipedia entry, like this happened, then this happened, then this mom did this and dad did this, and then they overdosed. And so it becomes kind of a, you know, checking the numbers kind of exercise. So I actually like the fact that, you know, if somebody has never, I mean, I presume there are very young people who have never heard of Bruce Springsteen. If they watch this movie, who not knowing who Bruce Springsteen is, and if they were expecting a full life story, they're not going to get it. But I think the way to do
Is a good snooze.
But what I liked about this is that it kind of instead makes a choice to show a very thin sliver of his life, right? A couple years while he was trying to make this. For me, the takeaway from this movie was that not all artists who achieve a lot of fame very quickly are fortunate, right? So if you're a Britney Spears, for example, you will keep getting pushed, keep making Britney albums, right? If you are a Lady Gaga, it's like you keep making these albums and there's so much commercial push that even if Lady Gaga, you know, early in her career wants to do a jazz album, there's no chance that anybody's going to let her do it. And I think this movie showed, like, he had just come off of the success of the of River, one of his first albums, and people were just starting to get to know him, and he decided to make this folkish album, right? Very much like you know, like a folk album. And for me, it was an example of how his decision was so commercially unfeasible, but he had the right people around him who stood for him and who kind of said, you know, Bruce Springsteen wants to make an album of songs he recorded in his bedroom. And if that's what he wants, maybe we can't sell it, but we are going to honor him and we'll make it. And it almost seems to me like a throwback to a time that doesn't exist anymore. These days, you know, you cannot do that. So for me, I kind of saw it from that perspective. I think the movie kind of fails when it comes to human, I completely agree to kind of human relationships. Like there's something about his dad being a bad, like he had a shit father, but many people have shit fathers, and it kind of keeps circling back to his dad being kind of abusive, sometimes physically to him and his mom. But what of that, right? So I think if they had, like what both of you have said, if they'd explicitly stated that he was suffering from crippling depression,
a lot of that was due to the fact that it was his father.
We don't know. We're none the wiser. But we don't need to.
So, but it just felt like, why do you keep circling on that?
Yeah.
Like, that can't be
because
the pathology of everything.
Because it would be an even more boring movie without that, right? We would have just this weird movie of like someone who's trying to look like Bruce Springsteen, looking over the water, looking over the guitar, picking up the guitar, playing with a, like it was just, it was like plugging in a machine, playing on a tape recorder. It was just, it was so dull.
I found some purity in that.
Really?
Yeah, I did. And I think the
17th time?
But the other piece which really doesn't work, so while we're complaining, is there's this whole sub-story with this female love interest.
Yeah.
Which doesn't go anywhere. It's kind of built. And I kind of felt bad. I mean, I think that's how things played out. I don't know if he eventually married her.
No, he didn't. I looked it up.
He did not.
No, he married someone from the E Street Band.
So then it's, I mean, is this his way of apologizing to what a dick he was?
That's a fantastic,
I don't know,
apology.
So I don't know, but I mean, I appreciated that it was just like a solemn, quiet look into what happened in like 3 years of his life. And I think Jeremy Allen White was great. I think it's, nothing is a higher bar for an actor than to play someone who is living and very well known. And he doesn't really like emulate him in his singing or how he looks, but he kind of
the singing was excellent. I have to say, I didn't know that he actually sang the song.
Yeah, and he inhabited, you know, Springsteen. I mean, I think there's one live, seemingly live reconstruction of it, and he seems to have gotten all the mannerisms and physicalities of Springsteen right.
Yeah, he got that right.
Yeah.
So let's sum this one up. let's go with Yazdi first.
I think if you're expecting a full-fledged biopic of like screaming guitars and all of that, this is not it. I think it's a very somber internal movie about a portion in his life. And like I said before, it speaks to, for me, it's a movie about the creative process. How do you create art and how do you hold on to what you've created and not let it get tempered by people around you, right, who have commercial interests. For me, that's what the movie's about. So 7.5 out of 10 for me.
Which you will.
Which I will bump up for the performances. I mean, I think Jeremy Allen White should be nominated for Best Actor. He was really very good. But that's me, yeah.
Joe?
I agree on the performance, but that's about the only thing I liked about this movie. And I feel bad for the fans in some ways because I think, there's an opportunity here for fan service, which isn't necessarily always the best motivation behind making a movie. But, what we got was kind of a dull plodding and ultimately it should have been more cerebral if you're going to take that tone. And I was looking at nothing happening for long parts of the movie, waiting for something to happen. So, I'm going to give this a 6 out of 10. It was just, great performance, but literally no other reason to watch it.
Agree on the performance, but deliver me from boredom. 4 out of 10.
Ooh, yeah. Yeah, no, I mean, I get it. There was a time in the movie where I was like, get me out of here. And I was like, oh, the title card flashed up. I was like, okay, that's what it was about. Maybe I missed it. All right. Movie number 3 this week then is Blue Moon.
Don't you want to sing that every time you see it?
You saw me standing alone. Yes, the movie Blue Moon is the latest entry by director Richard Linklater. So we last saw him in the Stuntman movie from a year or two ago, which I really like, by the way.
Oh, yeah. I've forgotten that, yeah.
The name of it will come to me while you're talking. So, so this is the latest movie by Richard Linklater. It stars Ethan Hawke as renowned lyricist Lawrence Hart, and who stars along Margaret Qualley, who plays Elizabeth Wayland, and Andrew Scott, who plays composer Richard Rogers. So the movie is set on the evening of March 31st, 1943, the opening night of the Broadway hit Oklahoma. Hart finds himself at a turning point. His former collaborator Rogers has moved on to new heights, and Hart must face the fallout of his own demons, his fading relevance, and the question of what happens when your creative partner leaves you behind. Confession time. I was really busy with work. I started watching this movie and I didn't get past the first 20 minutes. So I'll back out of a formal review, what I will say was it's kind of a little too talky for me. So I stepped back because we were in the home environment and therefore I did not see this movie. But the two of you did. Tell me what you thought.
So I think this is an incredible portrayal of a man desperately trying to hang on to some dignity, but consumed by fear and jealousy. And this incredible swapping between arrogance and extreme sadness. I think this is quite a magnificent, exquisite piece of work. But like you said, Joe, it's all talky. It's all talky. Nothing really happens, but you learn a lot about this man in a matter of under 2 hours. I did enjoy this movie in the end.
Yeah, this is very much a Yazdi movie. This movie was made for me. I think for me, more than anything else, it's a reminder of truly great American directors. Mm-hmm. And I think it's time we started counting Linklater in that. I mean, of what he made Slackers in 1990.
Yeah.
Now, 35 years later, he's making a movie which is like a little bit of time before Hart, you know, from Rodgers and Hart before he died. It goes over that period of time. So who knew that somebody who made Dazed and Confused, or somebody who did Boyhood, or somebody who did
The Before Sunrise
series could make a movie
about Hitman,
that was the movie he made with Glenn Powell. That, you know, just his versatility. And the one thing I love about this movie more than anything else, and I just saw it this afternoon, is that the dialogue is so good. It's so well written. I mean, I put my headphones on and I was just like sitting in my room and I was watching, so I was not distracted. I can see if you are distracted or if you, you know, that it may not mean much, but I really, in many ways, like the Springsteen movie, this is about the creative process. This is about people who are inherently very troubled, who are kind of fighting their own demons, but at the same time are bona fide geniuses. Like, this guy is a genius and he's struggling with his own arrogance, his own unwillingness to accept who he is. And, you know, he's a legend. Like, the, you know, on Broadway, like Rodgers, and before Rodgers and Hammerstein, there was Rodgers and Hart. And to take on this character and kind of do a deep dive in it, I was, you know, the casting is great. Bobby Cannavale, Margaret Qualley, all of these people. It was just like a hug for me. It's a very intellectual movie, I think. It's a very talky, urbane movie, but I really enjoyed the heck out of it. And while we've been talking about, you know, best actor recognition,
that nomination.
Like, how good is Ethan Hawke? I would have not, if I had to cast anybody, I wouldn't even think of Ethan Hawke. But obviously he has a working relationship with Linklater and he picked him and he just knocks it out of the park.
Yeah. So I think it's truly magnificent is how I describe it. And I do think it's overwritten a little bit because you have to constantly listen, right? Yeah, it's almost, what's that word? It's a little precious. Mm-hmm. But, and this could be a stage play.
Oh, yeah.
Right? Totally. This is totally like a stage play. It happens in one area.
Yeah.
But again, the interactions between this character and all of the other people in the environment are so perfect. And the rhythm that they get into is really, really good. And I think, Joe, if you'd stayed a little bit longer, it might have redeemed itself for you, because then more of the story plays out. But it's really an exploration of who this man is through the conversations he's having with random people in the bar.
Yeah.
I think it's a beautiful, you know, like you said, Yazdi, Ethan Hawke is transformed. He's unrecognizable. It's a great supporting cast.
Andrew Scott, I forgot to mention him. Andrew Scott is here. Rodgers. He plays Rodgers, yeah.
Yeah. And what I loved about this is that the music in the movie is given by a live piano player playing the music from Rodgers and Hammerstein in some ways. But he's like a bar player. So it's a very cute little gimmick that's going on in the background. Margaret Qualley is mesmerizing. She's mesmerizing on screen. I can't say I love this movie, but again, I really admire it. And I think it's pretty epic.
Yeah, while we're singing the praises of Ethan Hawke, he is in four things this year, just 2025. I'm looking at him.
Yeah.
He was in a movie that I saw at Tribeca, which I really loved. It's called She Dances. And I think that movie is going to get released sometime. It's a small independent movie, which is wonderful. He is in Blue Moon, obviously playing Hart. He is on this very well-regarded television series called The Lowdown, which I've been hearing everybody talk about it. It's a Western, and he's supposed to be amazing in it. And then he is in the sequel to Black Phone. I mean, talk about, you know, a horror movie, a proper slasher movie.
Yeah.
So talk about versatility. And
it's incredible.
I think this kind of stuff is very hard to pull off, because I think if you don't have a good script, if you don't have a good actor, it could look like a school play. It could look like the verisimilitude is very difficult to lock down, you know, when you have essentially something, it's a chamber piece. It's happening in one location mostly. But I just believed it. I just believed it from the very beginning. I believe that this was a very smart person. I believe that this was a person who hated himself enough, but was smart enough to interact with the world and kind of dazzle them with his wit. It was all very, very believable to me. So he's great company. He's just wonderful company, right?
Yeah.
So you can argue this is the movie. This is the kind of movie where nothing much happens, but that's enough. You don't need much to happen. He's just such good company.
Yeah, and I love this kind of game he's playing with his sexuality. Mm-hmm. And there's a lot of, again, ideas being explored around kind of, there's a lot of social commentary in this. And, but I can sum this up. Look, this is a magnificent, exquisite movie. It is a little talky. Nothing much happens, but you just learn so much about this guy in 2 hours. I mean, this is quite something. I think for me, this will get award love.
Yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 for me as well.
Oh, sorry, score is 8 out of 10 as well.
Yeah, it's an 8 out of 10 for me as well. And I think, like I said at the outset, for me, this is a testament to how accomplished Richard Linklater is and how accomplished Ethan Hawke is.
Yeah.
If you would have told me, watch a 2-hour film on, you know, Rodgers and Hammerstein. I'm not a Broadway person. I'm not, you know, I don't know much about their lives. I would have been like, really? Do I have to? Must I watch it? But then it's so well put together and so committedly performed. It was a joy for me to watch.
Ethan Hawke is amazing. Much, yeah. I mean, not that we're doing Netflix streaming picks, but there was that great TV series he was in called The Good Lord Bird.
Oh yeah.
Oh, he was phenomenal in that.
I was just looking up. He has had 4 nominations and never won.
Yeah, this is. I hope this is his year.
I mean, he's earned.
It's gonna be tough.
He's earned. Yeah,
it'll be tough, but he's earned the right to get that statue because I agree. He's one of my favorite.
Yeah, he's amazing. He's amazing. Yeah. He's really come into himself. Such a vanity-free performance. This is him looking ugly.
He's hardworking. Goodness.
And they've made him look. They've had to make him shorter. This guy was apparently famously only about 5'1". So they had to make him really small.
Especially in the scenes with Margaret Qualley, right? That he's kind of dwarfed in her presence.
It's really
literally.
Strange, yeah.
Yeah. I mean, he's been in 103 movies and television series, right? So when does his ship sail?
Oh, hopefully. Hopefully now.
Yeah.
Great film.
Yes.
Yes, Rashmi's referring to the marathon of 3 podcasts that we did today.
9 movies.
I will, by the time you're listening to this, I'll have had them all out. This will be the 3rd one that I put out. But thank you again for listening. If you haven't checked out our YouTube channel, please do. All the podcasts go there. And tip, if you can't wait for your latest dose of Movie Wallace, it usually comes out 24 to 48 hours earlier on YouTube, just because that's my publishing workflow. I edit the video, and it takes longer to publish the audio because that's a following step. So little trick, if you can't wait to see us or hear us, go to YouTube. Okay, until our next podcast, and again, this is the time of year where we're very busy, so I'm sure we'll be putting more podcasts out in the November timeframe. We look forward to hanging out with you guys again. Until our next podcast, too many movies, too little time. A goodbye from me
and me
as well.